Blog Talk Radio.
Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is Lord.
While the shepherds kept their watching,
tonight we kicked off with Go Tell It on the Mountain, and that's in tribute to a good Samaritan from the Southland who escorted an elderly woman, and he was black, through a crowd of thugs to get to her car because she was afraid that she was going to get punched. And this black gentleman, who had his own family in another car and a loaded gun, okay, helped the woman into her car, and as she drove away, a mob of black thugs pulled a Ferguson on them, and the mob tried to tear him to pieces. So he ran into a 7 7-Eleven, because it was a gas station, 7-Eleven type of location, and the people inside locked the door so he couldn't get in because they didn't want the thugs in with them. So they left him out there to die. How's that? This is modern-day America you're looking at. The guy was the Good Samaritan was a complete a gentleman. And he was interviewed by Sean Hannity. And what a polite guy. You can see the difference between Southern blacks and Northern blacks. Southern blacks have class. They really do. They know how to talk like gentlemen. He had a kid in his lap, and Hannity goes, "Is that
okay?" I'm back. I'm sorry about that. I don't know how much of the show I lost because I was talking without reading the message. So we'll find out after the show is over. I'm going to jump to a little blue moon, and then we'll read some messages.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really do care for. And then there suddenly appears before me the only one my arms would ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, "Please adore me." And when I looked, the moon had said to God,
Okay,
so what I was going to tell you was I don't know how much of the beginning of the show I lost. I was paying a tribute to a Good Samaritan, a black guy from down south, a real gentleman, first class American, and he came to the rescue of a little old white lady who was afraid to get back in a car because there was all thugs standing outside, you know, the Ferguson boys. And he escorted her to her car, and she sped off, and they jumped him. And as he was fighting them off, and there was a mob of about 25, including women and picture takers. Everybody wanted to get a video of him getting a beating. And this guy ran to the entrance of the 7-Eleven that he had been in, and they locked the door so he couldn't get in. And they left him out there to die. This is your American citizens in action. So, and his family was in the car, and he stayed away from them so they wouldn't hurt his family. So he stood alone out there, and
Now, Sean Hannity was interviewing him, and he says, and you had a gun in the car, and you did, and he didn't want to talk about it. So, you know, maybe he had an illegal gun. He didn't want to talk about it. And Sean's going, come on, you said you had a gun in the car. Come on, Sean, wake up. Start hanging around police stations. Learn a few tricks. But anyway, then he had his kid sitting in his lap, and Sean says, is that your little girl? And he goes, no, that's my little boy. He's dressed in blue. Usually boys are dressed in blue. Don't you remember the kindergarten poems? So, but he was a real gentleman. He was a first-class warrior. And America owes him a big thanks. But you won't see the president having lunch with him anytime soon or having a beer with him like he did to that cop hostage he took up in Massachusetts. Yeah, you don't know that story. Yeah, that's a real story there. But anyway, thank you, sir, for what you did. And I'm sure that the family of that little old white lady really appreciates what you did. And you may hear from them. And I hope they're rich, and I hope they cut you in for a piece of the action. Okay, so having said that, my opening theme was I hate the word partisan. You know, politicians are so phony. You know, you hear the guy saying, you'll hear a senator saying, my esteemed colleague on the other side of the aisle. What he's really saying is, that ugly looking Mother Fletcher over there, yeah, I'd like to tear his head off. But they won't do that. So that's why I hate the word partisan. And when I hear bribe-taking politicians say the word partisan, and don't bribe-taking doesn't mean you take an envelope. You could take a job for your, one of your family members. You could take all kinds of gratuities. You can take all kinds of side benefits. You can get two tickets to the Dominican Republic and 40 girls. You know, oh, I just went on I was doing an exploration of what the government is like. Yeah, haven't we heard all the BS? I just got a flashback. One of the pictures I put up tonight is Nancy Pelosi sitting with Bashar al-Assad, the butcher of Syria, the storer of Obama's weapons of mass destruction. Not Obama's. Well, they could be Obama's now because he's working on a nuke deal. No, it was Saddam Hussein's. See, Saddam Hussein belonged to a political party. It was called the Ba'ath Party. And you know who else belonged to the Ba'ath Party? And Bashar al-Assad. And also the Communist Party belongs to the Ba'ath Party. Yeah, the Soviets. You know the Soviets? You know, everybody is saying, well, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed. Well, they don't look collapsible today. As a matter of fact, I just watched a parade in the Kremlin. And the same guys that were marching in 1945, the same military appearance is still there. All of the missiles and all of the tanks and all of the marching troops and the bayonets. Yeah. The only thing that's missing is the hammer and sickle. They said, look, they put up a smiley face. Yeah. You know, what's that saying? A leopard never changes its spots. But anyway. Yeah, so the Soviet Union is not dead. The Soviet Union is alive and well and getting stronger every day. If you don't believe me, ask the Danes. They were just threatened with the destruction of their entire navy by peaceful Putin. Peaceful Putin. Yeah. The KGB karate expert. No, there's no more KGB. Oh, that's right. They morphed. They're now the FSB, I think. I think those are the three letters. Yeah. Yeah, the Soviets are still there, my friends. And all of their satellite countries are on short leashes, and they're taking it back piece by piece. Hey, where did Georgia go? Oh, got absorbed. We're like a blotter. They went into the Soviet blotter. And what about the Crimea? Oh, the Crimea, it got absorbed. What about the Danish Navy? Right now, we got an eye on it. Yeah. And Europe is in trouble, man. They got all of Africa coming in to Italy. All of Africa. they have, I forget what they said. They got, I think they said they had like 1.5 million people coming in the last month or something. And they come all coming into Italy. And then they're from Liberia, but they're not from Liberia. They're from Liberia and Guinea, Liberia and Ghana, Liberia and Mali. Name an African country. They're all coming into Italy. And on the way over in the boat, yesterday, they drowned 12 out of 15 Christians. They threw them overboard because they were in rough seas and the Christians were praying, and it wasn't Muslim prayers, so the Muslims threw them overboard, and 12 of them drowned. Three were left. There was only 15 Christians on the boat. They murdered 12, and three only survived, I can't say by the grace of God, because they might throw me overboard. But the three locked themselves arm in arm and made like a bulwark. Now, the captain of the ship was a Muslim, and now the ship pulls in, and the Italians got to arrest the 15 that killed the 12 Christians, and then they arrested the captain of the ship and his first mate. So that's how things are going in Europe right now. And beware of the communists who say Europe is much, much better than the United States. Things are better in Europe. No, they're not. As a matter of fact, next time the mullah does a call to prayer, he may have a neck throat cutter in his hand. You never know. You never know. You know, you can go out for a walk and you can get stabbed in the chest like Van Gogh. Okay, so I hate the word partisan. And when I hear bribe-taking politicians say the word partisan, that tells me the Republicans sold out. Communists never crossed the aisle. They only worshipped the double cross. Obama gave the Iranians access to nuke-building money, $700 million a month that was frozen. How much of that money goes back to the party of death, the Partito della Muerte, the comunistas? How much of that money goes back? Huh? Did the Iranians have to pay up front to get the money? It's $700 million a month. That buys a lot of plutonium. And the Russians got plenty to sell. Look, we'll take a little off our stockpile. We'll put it in your stockpile. Yeah, that would be against the law. Who makes the laws? Obama makes the laws. See, the Republicans run. That saying is now in kindergarten coloring books. Hillary is finished. Jeb Bush is finished. Stop with the Hillary. She is not the candidate of the Communist Party. If I want to play charades, I'll play it with my grandkids. The real candidate is offstage left and will not debut until the convention. And then you will see the real communist candidate. Only Commissar Soros knows the real candidate. For sure it is not Hillary. She is not communist enough, even though she wrote her thesis on Saul Alinsky when she was a communist college kid. So communists always replace communists with another communist. So be sure when it is time to vote, if you're going to join the party of death to little children, the flag burners party, the weed whackers for higher taxes, the third world America party of smugglers and slavers, 10% of all the children coming in being smuggled into the country are sold off. They're sold off to dirty people who do dirty things. The party that the Russians won't give a ride to the moon, NSA now stands for No Shot America. The Communist Party that disarms the Ukraine and rearms death to America and the Jews, Iran. If you're Jewish and you're still in the Democrat Party, you know what? Moses is going to get you. The Communist Party that bails out fellow communists in Cuba. Fire the rhinos, throw out the commos. We had a revolution, we had a civil war. Next comes a resurrection. Go American or Go Home.
Much for moonlit skies, never wink back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light. And I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on the mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. I used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused the spark. That's a four-alarm fire now. I never made love by lantern shine. I never saw rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light. I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light. And I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on a mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. You know I used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and lit that spark. That's a four-alarm fire now. I never made love by lantern shine. Never saw rainbows in my wine. Now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light.
That's the great Bobby Darin, who was coming on strong. He was catching up to Frank Sinatra, and he died at an early age from a heart failure. And if he had been alive today with that same problem, he would still be alive, because today they have wonderful things for people that have heart problems, namely stents. Imagine 60 years ago, a guy that needed a stent, well, they would put him on his side and he would die. They couldn't do anything. So we're lucky to be alive. There's a book called The Bait and Switch of Hooking Up. And it's detailing the devastating consequences of sex before marriage. And here's a couple of stats that they used as a teaser for the book. Just under half of college freshmen have had sex in high school. I just flashed back to a girl in the fifth grade who told her mother she can't hold out much longer. And her class were doing BJs in the hallway in the fifth grade. Out of 150 college students, over half had had oral sex within the last 30 days. One out of three has had three or more sexual partners within the last year. 75% of girls and 55% of guys who have had sex in high school or college privately regret it and wish they could have a do-over. How sad, huh? And I watched the Duckman, and he opened up a speech, I think, at the conservative convention with a stat from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. One-third of the nation has sexually transmitted diseases. Wonderful. We're so modern. So let's see what else we got to talk about. The betrayal papers. Who is Barack Hussein Obama? This is from Restoring Liberty. I like Restoring Liberty. The guy's name is Joe Miller. He ran for office up in Alaska. He lost. because it's kind of hard to beat the communists. They lie. See, it's kind of hard to beat them when they lie. Read this betrayal papers that goes in depth on who Obama really is. And Hillary Clinton, class president of a failed generation. Whoa! Hillary Clinton has always been at the head of her class. That includes being among the leading edge of the 80 million strong baby boom generation that first started arriving in 46 to 47. You know what I was thinking today? I saw this country change. Drugs caused a major change in this country. Drugs led to a lot of crime. When I started out, my generation, I'm 38, 1938. My generation was, I would say it was 80% honest. And if you had to hire somebody for work, all you had to do was look at them, do a handshake, size them up and do a handshake. Can he do the job? Yeah, come on in. That all changed. My generation, I believe, was the last honest generation. And it's all because of drugs. And I was shocked when people, other competitors in my industry, as they hired people, they had to take a drug test. There was nobody taking drug tests when I went to work. That's one of the side benefits of being a junkie, man. Yep. And that's where all the crime is. There were no gates in my neighborhood. There were no burglar alarms. The only burglar alarm was in a bank 10 blocks away from my house. That was the only one. People used to leave their doors open in the summertime because there was no air conditioning. So let's see what it says here. The betrayal papers have thus far investigated and explained the Obama administration and their alliance with the international terrorist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. The articles analyze. We're in big trouble, folks. And when you got the head of the CIA, who used to be an Irishman, is converted to Islam, you know we're in trouble. You know? The bottom of the barrel is moved to the top. The articles analyzed several aspects of White House policy, foreign and domestic, and compared them to the objectives of the Muslim Brotherhood. Parts 4 and 5 will explain the personal ties that bind Obama as well as the progressive American left. Stop with that. Stop saying the word left. If you got to say the word left, you can say the word communist. Don't be afraid to say communist. Progressive American left is a communist plain, not American. Communism is not American. Has there ever been a president whose personal history is so murky, so questionable, and so baffling? Wait till you see what they give us next. All one must do is recall the allegations, still open for debate and research, that checker Obama's background. Laid out below are some of the allegations, not to be proved or disproved, but to remind the reader that Obama's personal history is replete with question marks. A 1991 promotional literary pamphlet featured a short biographical sketch of Obama and claimed he was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. What is his actual name? The only publicly available school record for Obama lists him as an Indonesian citizen named Barry Sotero. Moreover, on an immigration document from 1965, Obama's mother included the name Sobarka under Barack Hussein Obama. This is likely a name given to him by the Islamic cult of Subud, to which his mother proudly and openly belonged. For a reason yet to be explained, Obama's Social Security number begins with the prefix 042, which corresponds to Connecticut, a state in which Obama has never lived. Regarding his academic records, recall that Obama attended three universities: Occidental College, Columbia University, and Harvard University. his admission to which coincides with a $25 million donation from the Saudis to the Harvard Law School. His academic records with these three institutions have never been revealed. Despite efforts by investigative reporters, the student body president at Columbia University during Obama's time there, Wayne Allen Root, once the Libertarian Party vice presidential candidate, has stated publicly that he never met or even heard of Obama while at Columbia and cannot find any classmates of his who remember him either. Root, like Obama, was a political science major. While campaigning for president, candidate Obama presented himself as a professor of constitutional law while at the University of Chicago. That wasn't even mentioned. So that's four universities. Yet this turned out to be untrue. In fact, he was a senior lecturer, a title and position significantly less prestigious than professor. Finally, the best known and most researched of these allegations is the issue of Obama's birth certificate from his days as a candidate in the Democrat primary. The place of Obama's birth has been in contention, while Obama has insisted he was born in Honolulu, Hawaii in 1961. There are others who claim he was born in Mombasa, Kenya. There's even a copy of a purported Kenyan birth certificate. Moreover, apparently, trustworthy sources swear that the long-form birth certificate, I guess that's from Hawaii, is a forgery. All of these questions leave the investigator with only one choice. Let me tell you, this guy didn't do this on his own. This guy was primed and fired into the mass. The Communist Prelude, Frank Marshall Davis, Obama's mentor, as documented extensively in Paul Kenger's book, The Communist, Davis ranks high among Obama's early life influences. A liberal card-carrying member of the Communist Party. My question is, was he being paid by the Soviet Union? That makes him an agent. Davis was considered by the FBI an enemy of the state. How did Hillary and Bill get 9,000 names from the FBI files? How did they do that? Is the FBI compromised? Frank Marshall Davis, a known Soviet communist and admirer of Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler, was a friend of Obama's mother's father, Stanley Dunham. The communist Davis lived in both Hawaii and in Chicago. He was Barack Obama's mentor through the 1970s until his departure for Occidental College in 1979. Davis was also a pornographer. In his book, Sex Rebel, he wrote excitedly about having sex with minors. Pedophilia was unusual for communists of the era. Harry Hay, another communist and associate of Davis, was reportedly an advocate of NAMBLA, the National Namboy Love Association. In 1995, a broadcast on Cambridge Municipal Television, Barack Obama described Davis as a close friend of my maternal grandfather, a close friend of Gramps, and a fairly well-known poet. Irrespective of the publicly accepted, sanitized biography of young Obama, the historical facts established that his primary political mentor was a Soviet communist sex offender, introduced to him by his mother's family. Tell me your friends, as my mother used to say. Show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. George Soros. This is the one I was looking for. Am I glad I found this. George Soros, a.k.a. Georgi Schwartz, is the Hungarian-born billionaire investor and financier behind a tangled constellation of progressive front organizations. I believe that George Soros is picking out the next president of the United States, and it's not Hillary Clinton. Among these front organizations are the Open Society Foundation/Institute, ACORN, Think Progress, the Center for American Progress. Code Pink. Boy, weren't they on George Bush's case? Now you don't see them. Occupy Wall Street. Remember the guy pooping on the cop car? National Council of La Raza, The Race, and the Tides Foundation. MoveOn.org. I was building a website called MoveAway.org. The New America Foundation and the International Crisis Group. As one writer wrote succinctly in 2011, essentially the entire leftist wing of the Democrat Party. Let's face it, man, the Democrat Party is the Communist Party. There is no leftist wing. There's just more radical communists, including the president, can be tied to George Soros in some way. George was born in 1930 in Budapest, Hungary, to a Jewish family. He grew up in wartime Hungary and was an admitted Nazi collaborator who turned other Jews over to the Nazi authorities. To this day, he has stated that he has no remorse for his actions in turning in Jews to the Nazis and having their property confiscated. As Soros said to 60 Minutes reporter Steve Croft, it was the happiest time of my life. Soros is a financial manipulator and breaker of currencies. In 1992, Soros crashed the British pound when he made a bet against the Deutschmark. Soros has a history of using government influence for personal gain. In 1999, Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, blocked a $500 million loan by the U.S. Import-Export Bank to the Russian oil company Tyumen. Tyumen planned to use this money to acquire one of Soros' companies and a Siberian oil field, and apparently Soros felt his deal wasn't sweet enough. A few months later, Albright did approve the loan, but only after Soros was guaranteed additional protections for his interest at the expense of Tyumen. Yep, I got to tell you something. My rules are sweet and simple, and one of them is get rid of all the lobbies. No lobbies. The only lobby should be in a hotel. And the largest champagne contribution that any American can donate to any political group is $1. And that includes the government of China. If you want to try and buy an American politician, the most you can pay is $1. And that'll put an end to all of this crap. And it's time you got some of your money back. You shouldn't be paying taxes over 40 hours a week. All the government should be entitled to is taxes on the first 40 hours, and only on one job. If you have to work five to keep your head above water, the government shouldn't be getting a cut on your blood and sweat on the other four jobs. This pattern repeated in 2009 when the U.S. Import-Export Bank announced a preliminary commitment to loan $2 billion to the Brazilian oil giant Petrobras. And right now, Brazil's got a big scandal going on about corruption in Petrobras and the Brazilian government. And in 2009, when was the BP oil spill? Because didn't Obama send all of the deep water oil rigs? He shut them down and they went to Brazil and they went to Africa. So, and then Obama loaned a Petrobras, well, that must be the money, loaned the money so that they could drill oil for China. This caused the shares in the company to rise 27.9% from April 2009 to August of 2009. Now, you know that Congress passed a law that they're allowed to do inside trading. If they know a deal is going down, they can buy stocks or sell stocks, affecting a great margin of profit. And the only ones that are allowed to do that are the House and the Senate. If Wall Street tries to do it, everybody goes to jail. So the American people got upset about this insider trading rule, and they put the pressure on Congress to clean up their act. And they said, okay, we're going to take it out of out of play. And so they voted it out. And a month later, when everybody got American Alzheimer's, they reinstated the insider trading rule. And they're doing it today. And I'd like to see the stock sheets for purchases and sales for today when the market went down 283 points. I'd like to know which politicians sold and which politicians bought, and what did they buy and what did they sell. So, in 2002, French authorities prosecuted Soros for insider trading. In 2012, the government of Russia issued an arrest warrant for Soros for violating Basel II financial regulations. That could be a front. You know, we're going to issue a warrant for you, George. You keep doing what you're doing. Break America, George. Obama's foreign policy and the Arab Spring are intertwined with Soros' interests. In 2008, the International Crisis Group, a.k.a. ICG, a Soros front group, issued a paper that urged the Egyptian government to allow the Muslim Brotherhood to form a political party. That's remember when CNN came in with the cell phone revolution? Oh, here's a guy that's dirty. I knew this guy was dirty. Okay, let's see here. They issued a paper urging the Egyptian government to allow the Muslim Brotherhood to form a political party. Anyone with knowledge of the Muslim Brotherhood's activities in Egypt from the 1940s onward, which include assassination and terrorism, understands the necessity of the Egyptian government's hard line on the terror group. Interestingly, ICG is also home to Ambassador Thomas Pickering. You know, he was the guy in charge of the Benghazi cover-up. This guy is dirty, man. He is dirty. The Obama administration's lead investigator for Benghazi, see, I told you, as well as Robert Malley, who was recently appointed by Obama to a prominent position to lead Middle East policy, despite a history of connections to Hamas. In a 2011 op-ed for the Washington Post, Soros himself referred to Israel, not Hamas, as a stumbling block. The Washington Post. George Soros runs the Washington Post. I always thought the Washington Post was dirty. I know the New York Times is dirty. Yep, they covered up the murder of 10 million Ukrainians by Stalin. And their editor was a communist. And his name was Walter Duranty. Savage thinks it's Jimmy Duranty. So they wanted the Muslim Brotherhood to be given a seat at the table. You know who saved? Egypt? The Egyptian army, under the leadership of Assisi. God bless him. And I know they got a price on his head. Okay, then they go into Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. We all know about them. I got a picture of him. Valerie Jarrett was born in Shiraz, Iran, in 1956 to James and Barbara Taylor Bowman. An examination of Jarrett's family is the key to understanding her influence in Chicago. Jarrett's father, James, a Howard University graduate, was at the time of her birth working as a physician and geneticist in Iran. Her mother, Barbara's family, is deeply connected to Chicago politics. Jarrett's maternal grandfather was Robert Taylor, who was on the board of the Chicago Housing Authority, a municipal corporation. To this day, the Robert Taylor Homes, a public housing project, bear his name. So we could go on and on here. I'm going to break for a tune because I don't want to bore you. I'll read on while the tune is playing. And I'll give you a little Brazilian soft show. Okay, back to Valerie Jarrett. And this article says that her and Rahm Emanuel didn't get along. And that's why Emanuel left. He went back to ruin Chicago. Given Jarrett's political force in the Capitol, the media curiosity about Jarrett's background, governing principles, ideological beliefs, and business dealings has been conspicuously lacking. One of Robert Taylor's, that's Jarrett's grandfather, business partners was Rufus Cook. Rufus's ex-wife, Ann, is a cousin of Jarrett's. Cook is also a legal counsel for Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam, based out of Chicago. In 2007, the country was shocked when a video emerged that showed the pastor of Obama's church, Reverend Wright, of Trinity United Church of Christ, saying of September 11th, 2001, America's chickens are coming home to roost. This was a borrowed line originally spoken by the Nation of Islam silver tongue spokesman Malcolm X, referring to the assassination of President Kennedy. Malcolm X himself was murdered by black Muslims. He was shot down giving a speech at the Audubon Ballroom in Manhattan. And it's believed that he became disillusioned with the Nation of Islam leader, and he was assassinated. Indeed, Tuck's Reverend Wright and NOY's Louis Farrakhan, that's Nation of Islam, are thick as thieves. In 1984, Wright and Farrakhan traveled together to Libya to meet the mad dog in the Middle East. When these politicians go to foreign countries, they're going there for one reason, one main reason, to get money, to get a handout. Just before Bush went into Iraq, three Democrat communists, one was named Thompson, one was named Bonnier, and one was named McDermott. They all went to see Saddam Hussein to tell them they were on his side against Bush, and they were looking for some money. And they didn't say that, but everybody knew why they were there. And Saddam wouldn't see them. And that showed, I started to talk about that picture of Nancy Pelosi sitting with Bashar al-Assad. You know, I saw her complaining to the Air Force that her plane wasn't big enough, that she had to travel at least once a week back to San Francisco. And so the Air Force gave her a bigger plane. And then what she did is she put 41 Democrats on it and loaded up the plane with $41,000 worth of booze, and she flew into Syria to meet with Bashar al-Assad. And he gave her a tour of Syria, and he took her to a mosque, which is known to be the mosque where Jesus will appear and then kill all the Jews for 40 days. And Nancy was there, gobbling it up. Unbelievable, huh? And then she asked Bashar al-Assad to close the palace windows because the screams of American GIs having their legs blown off in nearby Iraq was disturbing her. And those GIs were having their legs blown off and the rest of their bodies shredded, including burned faces, by IEDs manufactured, reassembled in Iraq, in Syria, and they used the latest state-of-the-art Iranian copper lugs. Now the Iranians are in Erbil. The Iranians are all over Iraq. And when George Bush left, he left everybody in good shape. Obama has lost the entire Middle East, and I don't believe it's by stupidity. He's lost it by design. So, let's see. Where was I? The country was shocked there when America's chickens had come home to roost. Oh, and that Reverend Wright and Louis Farrakhan. Let me see. Did Wright go to Libya too? Wright and Farrakhan traveled together to Libya to meet the Mad Dog in the Middle East. Remember Hillary Clinton joking, we came, we saw, we killed him? And the people that got a hold of him, they shoved rods up his anus. And then when Hillary Clinton said, who cares how they died, she never explained how the ambassador suffered the same fate as Muammar Gaddafi. Because who cares how they died? What does it matter? Another Jared cousin is Tony Cook Bush, daughter of Rufus and Ann. In 2013, Tony, a Chicago lawyer, this is one, was hired as the head lobbyist for News Corp owner of Fox News. That is why Jared has been spotted dining with Rupert Murdoch. Yeah. You know what I said when I saw Clinton hugging Bush and they were comparing library revenue? I said, when you get to the top, it's all the same people. American people got to take their country back. You're not going to take it back with foreign governments buying votes. You're not, you got to put an end to that. $1 maximum champagne contribution. Oh, what, they got to buy TV time? No, they don't have to pay for it. TV time is free. Tough luck, networks. American people are donating your TV time to the candidates. So there's no need for money to change hands. And she said she intends to stay in the White House until the lights go off. I wonder if Obama thinks that too, huh? I'm going to give you a love song. There's writing songs of love, but not for me. Oh, no, it's different. Brazilian.
Estrelas no céu, mas não pra mim. Lindas canções de amor, mas não pra mim. A chuva cai aqui, e o sol já vai pra ali. E eu não sei mais sentir meu coração. Eu sempre acreditei num grande amor que fosse uma flor. Agora não sei mais o que fazer de mim. Será foi tudo em vão.
Quick article, students at John Hopkins University wanted to display fetuses, you know, at different stages, and they went under the heading of Voice for Life, and their logo is three babies wrapped, bundled. Three of white, tan, and black. And they're wrapped in bundles. And in the back is background is a minaret. And they have a banner. It says Voice for Life. And they were told that they couldn't they couldn't promote life in a John Hopkins, who was dedicated to saving lives. Yeah, unbelievable. But they got a reversal on the decision. And Voice for Life continues to serve as a courageous example of pro-life youth. In just 2 years, Voice for Life won the university's Best New Group Award, created rich dialogue about a presentation of radical pro-abortion activist Gloria Steinem. Yeah. And her slogan is, "I'm not having any kids and neither are you." And brought powerful presentations and demonstrations to campus about the horrors of abortion. You want to see a light fare on abortion? I got a beautiful one on abortion. It's on YouTube. And it's called Save the Kids, Abutom, A-B-U-T-O-M. And it's very rich. And it will give your conscience some pangs. And if you want something heavy duty, I also have Abortion is Murder, Abutom. And make no bones about it, the Democrat Party is the Party de la Muerte. It's the party of abortion. That's their banner, kill the kids. Choice, they call it. Well, there's 47 absentee ballots who were all butchered today by 5:30. Every day, 4,700 American babies go to the gallows. Okay, I'm going to play a tune. I'm dedicating it to white people, white Christians. Oh, they got me.
Just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow. So then I am dreaming of a white Christmas. Christmas card I write. May your days, be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be white.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Christmas Eve.
That's our folks show. That's our show for tonight, folks. Have a nice night.